shotglassdigital.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I am one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man who is half German and half Scottish, so he's definitely the hybrid, Adam Farmer.
It all makes sense now.
I mean, what? They're two warring races, right?
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay. I don't even know where to go from there.
Speechless, huh?
Yeah, I'm still...
Mission accomplished.
That's
nice, how the well end... Done. Isn't that kind of how it seemed, though? Like, at the end?
Yeah.
When they're trying to do the whole hybrid explanation, it's like, oh, well, it's this. Oh, no, it must be this. Oh, no, it's you and Clara. You know, it's like, no, like, quit guessing. Tell us what it really is.
and do we know? I don't know. The doctor kind of said at the end, maybe, that he... figured it out, but I have to say, though, I was patting myself on the back at
again.
That point, saying, you know what, the doctor really didn't know who the hybrid was in the confession dial. He was just playing with it. I said something pretty darn close to that our last episode.
Huh. Okay, well, it sounds like that could be something that would lead to a bigger conversation. So before we jump right into that, we're here to review Hellbent, the final episode of season 9 of Doctor Who. And I don't think we have anything else to talk about, right?
The Christmas special's coming. There's been a couple more trailers released. One of the trailers that was released has, I don't know, something pretty surprising in it that I guess we could have known by the title, but I definitely didn't expect it. So outside of that, nothing new. Christmas special will be here before we know it.
Okay, well, you've piqued my interest because I don't think I've seen this trailer you're speaking of. So what is this thing that's surprising?
You know that giant Baymax robot?
Yes.
And the head that's just floating around?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's River's husband.
Oh.
Mind blown, right?
Not mind blown. Because I guess the title, you know, implies, and we even talked in our last episode, I think, about the possibility of there being a husband involved and that it would be awkward to have the doctor there.
Yeah.
So,
but,
so yeah, I guess,
that.
I mean, it is kind of surprising that it seems like he's the bad guy.
Yeah.
She's married to him, but I'm sure we'll get some explanation.
Yeah. I just, it so was
what
one of
was
those
the,
things.
In the trailer, it specifically says that he's her husband?
It basically breaks down to the doctor saying, he's your husband? And River saying, yes. And like, okay. The doctor just giving this like amused look.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
All right. Well, I mean, the Christmas special is right around the corner. Like you were saying before, this is like the shortest amount of time we have between the finale and the Christmas special. So
yeah.
It's almost like it's just we're taking a week off, which Doctor Who has done from time to time, and then we get another episode. So, we don't get a big break by any means. We're just going to get a kind of a week off.
Yeah, which I'll take that. I like not having a long break. I want to get to the Christmas special. It's always a fun episode.
Well, and then we'll have a really long break right after that.
Yeah, I'm not thinking about that yet.
All right. Well, and we'll have a lot to ponder, I think. This episode, Hellbent, left us with some answers and what left us with maybe even more questions. So we'll have plenty of time to consider all the possibilities on where the doctor's going next and who he's going there with.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to going back. I'm not a huge fan of rewatching multiple episodes over and over and over again, but I have a feeling I'm going to be revisiting the season and at least hitting the highlights and just watching it one more time. There's something about the season that I'm still trying to wrap my mind around.
So you say you're going to hit the highlights. Do you have a couple episodes that you would say you are your highlights?
I would say everything except for Sleep No More and before under the lake and before the flood. I'm
Okay.
dropping those three episodes from series nine, and I'll take everything else from there.
Okay, so you have 9 episodes in series 9. All right. Well, let's talk about Hellbent. This is the final episode of the 12th season of Doctor Who. This is, let's see, written by Stephen Moffat, of course. He's not going to let anyone else write the finale.
Nope, it's all
Directed
his.
by Rachel Talalay. And we're on story number 260
Wow.
of Doctor Who. So, yeah, Hellbent. This is
Hell
coming
bent.
right off the heels of Heaven Sent, the one that we spent quite a bit of time picking apart. I think the way I worded it in our tweet was I was nitpicky and you were explaining, is basically how that episode turned out. And we get, this is kind of, we're moving right into this one, straight off of what happened at the end of that one.
Yeah, and I before we jump into this one, I gotta say, I really appreciate everybody jumping on our Facebook page, and everybody that commented or asked questions or made some statement. There was quite a bit of stuff that was going around after our episode, after the series episode. It was I really liked some of the conversation that was taking place. It sheds a little bit of light, it raises a few more questions, but it was fun to get to watch a broader conversation taking place.
Definitely. Yeah, we've gotten a lot more interaction lately on Facebook and on Twitter. I actually noticed today we had gotten some mentions on Twitter from one of our listeners, specifically agreeing with us about the episode Sleep No More. I think agreeing with me maybe more than you. So, yeah, but yeah, this one, there's a lot happens. This is an extra long episode. So, we have extra time. A lot of stuff goes on. Some surprising things. I don't know where should we start? What's the first thing you want to talk about?
Oh man, I am not entirely sure. Like you said, there's a lot of things. When you sit down and you think about this episode, there doesn't seem like there's all that many things. It seems like there's two big aspects. So the first one is where the doctor is and what's the doctor doing. And then you have like halfway through the episode, you have who the doctor's with and what the doctor's going to do. It seems like it divides up into those two, I don't know, two sections within the episode. But once you start to watch the episode, you realize that within each of those, there is a ton of stuff taking place. It's going to be kind of like eating an elephant as we talk about
I
it.
really had mixed feelings about this one, because, like you were saying, there's different sections almost to the story, and some sections I really didn't like what was going on, and then other parts I really, really liked what was going on. So I think as we go through it, I can kind of point out the highs and lows for me personally. But I guess we can start right at the beginning. The Doctor. It starts out a little mysteriously because the last episode we have the Doctor. He finds his way out of his confession dial. He's on Gallifrey. He tells the kid to go threaten people, and he says that the hybrid is me. And then this episode starts out not with the doctor on Gallifrey, but in a diner, or no, on the side of a road walking into a diner.
Right.
Of course, with his guitar.
With his guitar.
And it's kind of like, okay, this is interesting. He walks into the diner, and there's Clara working at the diner. And it immediately made me think of what happened with Clara as she jumped into the time stream.
Right.
The idea of her being scattered across all of the Doctor's time,
It's a splinter, Clara, right?
different versions of her have shown up, different versions of her have died, and so I'm thinking, oh, this is like maybe we're gonna finally get some closure on that, that he is now running into another splinter Clara. Did you think about that at all? Did that pop into your head at all when you saw her?
Yeah, it definitely. I definitely wondered if that was the same thing, if they were playing with the idea of here she is showing up in time stream. I still had questions as far as like how the doctor got there. Some of those minor details, right? Where are we in this story? How is he in a diner? Why is he carrying his guitar? Some of those things. But yeah, I definitely thought splinter occurrence of Clara. Either that, or I was wondering if this might have been another Mind Palace experience, if you will. Totally different than what we saw in Heaven Sent, where he was in his own TARDIS, but something along the same thing. Like, he's getting ready to die, and he just so happened to be picturing Clara somewhere. So, like, it's either a dream sequence or it's Splinter Clara.
Okay. Did you recognize that it was the same diner that he was there with Amy and Rory?
I did. Yeah.
Like right
The
away?
American diner. Not right away. It wasn't until they showed the wall that had Elvis on it,
Yes.
that it was like, okay, this is definitely the same place. Not necessarily when he first sat down at the bar stool and he was talking with Clara.
Right. So now that we know that that was just the TARDIS mimicking a diner, I'm wondering now, back when the doctor was with those companions there in that diner, was that actually him tricking them and they were in the TARDIS
I don't know. I wouldn't go that far. I think the TARDIS just played a diner for that one.
Right, yeah,
A
it just.
different TARDIS, the new TARDIS.
The new TARDIS, right? Which was really good at mimicking a diner that it had never seen.
Yeah, I have troubles even calling it the TARDIS, right? I feel like the TARDIS is one thing. It's not multiple things, but
I
I
think as
guess
long as
it's
you say, because you did it right, I think you said a TARDIS.
a TARDIS as opposed
So
to the
when you say
TARDIS.
the TARDIS, then we're referring to, you know, the one we
That definite
know.
article is very important.
But a TARDIS is accurate in this case for sure. The new TARDIS, I mean, this is kind of jumping a little bit further into the story, but we did get that classic TARDIS, kind of what the first Doctor started with, which I thought was awesome. One of my favorite things about this episode is that to kind of see that classic TARDIS reimagined in a modern way.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And even reading some of the material that came along with it or watching the Doctor Who extra, Capaldi, it seemed like everybody was a huge fan of going back to that classic look. I mean, they hedged their opinions by saying, "Oh, but we really like our TARDIS as well," or I don't think I could choose, but everybody seemed pretty darn excited about going back to the classic look, the scientific, the stark white, the minimal control panel, if you will.
Were you ever worried that like he was switching TARDISes, like that he now, because he lost his last one, that they were kind of starting fresh and this was going to be kind of the Doctor's new TARDIS?
I did have a like small twinge of fear come up, but then as soon as he said, "Now we can track down my TARDIS so I can change my shirt," it was like, okay, whew, he's going back to her. You can't forget that TARDIS. That TARDIS is a person.
Yeah, I agree that it has become a character of the show. So I would have been very like, oh no, they can't do that.
Yeah.
But they've done plenty of things that I would say they can't do, quote unquote. And so it wouldn't have surprised me, but I wouldn't have liked it.
You know what I particularly like about the start of the diner scene? And you can call me crazy, but I loved when the doctor, he said, I have no money, but I can play." And then he starts in with the Impossible Girl theme song on his guitar. There was something about that that I loved.
Yeah, I agree. I think we said before, Clara is not my favorite companion, but I've always really liked that theme.
Yeah.
It's very recognizable. As soon as he starts playing it, you know exactly what it is.
And as goofy as it is that the doctor carries a guitar, say what you want about it, they've done some pretty darn cool things with that guitar this season.
That was the best moment, I think, with the guitar. The first time where I was just like, okay, that's kind of, well, you know what? I'll take that back. The tank scene where he came in on the tank with the guitar was pretty awesome too.
Yeah.
The fact that the guitar kept popping back up, I was kind of like, okay, we get it. You play the guitar.
But it
But
wasn't overused, right?
no, it
He plays
wasn't.
it the
If you look
tank scene.
back, I think we get maybe what, three or four appearances across
Yeah.
all 12 episodes. So yeah,
Yeah.
it wasn't I was afraid it was going to become overused, but it didn't really become overused. And the way that they used it here at the end, I thought was great.
Yeah, I as soon as he started in that in with that, it kind of softened my approach to the episode. It made me sentimental in a way, because right there you have all those questions with what is Claire doing? Like, why is she here? Like, I thought we got rid of her, or I thought she was lost to us, and faced the Raven, and yet here. It seemed like from the get-go she was going to be playing a pretty major part. But then as soon as he played it on the guitar, it was like, oh, okay, I'm going to let this play out. We'll see what happens.
I didn't think, like, at this point when they showed her, I thought it was more just a once he starts telling her the story, I was like, okay, this is just a device. It's like a twofold device. Number one, it's a way for the doctor to retell what just happened. And number two, it's a way for them to give, Jenna Coleman a part in the finale. It went much further than that later.
Yeah. So the story that he's telling in the diner is about him being on Gallifrey. And so we jump back to Gallifrey and we find him wandering into the barn. And
We were right.
I'm gonna give you props. I was wrong. I would definitely say you were more right than I was
We were
when it
both
comes to
right.
the nature of that barn.
I think we were both right.
Were we both right? Is that
Yeah.
the same barn from the 50th?
I believe it is both the same barn that the moment was in, as well as where the child was sleeping.
Okay.
I think it's the same place.
There was one shot of it that I was like, okay, that could be the same barn, but then they highlighted the bed, they highlighted him going to it, the fact that the lady said that's for the boys if they should ever come back.
Who do you think she's talking about there?
The doctor for one.
Yeah. The master?
I would say maybe the master would be the next one, but I
Ironically,
don't
not a boy anymore.
ironically not a boy anymore, but I don't know. I kind of get the sense that she might have just been the house or the barn. She had the barn that people would just pass through. I don't
It
know.
almost seemed like the way that she was talking, it was almost like the way a mother would say
Right.
that, like, if my boys, kind of how parents will keep their room, a kid's room
Right.
exactly as it was when they left for college, so when they come back their room will still be there. So I kind of got a moment of like, oh, is this the doctor's mom? But I feel like if it was, there would have been more to it. They would have played
Right.
that up a little bit more. So I think instead it was some woman who was involved in the care of him as he was younger.
Right.
And it almost feels like because of kind of this humble beginnings that he comes from, that the doctor maybe he was an orphan, maybe he grew up with other young boys who were also orphans. Like, I don't know. Like, I kind of got this feel that it was almost like a house for, homeless children.
Right.
Did,
No,
although
and
it didn't necessarily seem like it was very big, so that it couldn't have fit much more than the doctor and maybe one other kid, but there was only one bed too, so it all was a bit confusing.
yeah, it's kind of like that idea of like a runaway or someone without, they kind of find their way into the barn and then you're like, you can just stay here. I'll just make you a bed. And then the longer they stay, the more like home it becomes for them. I kind of got the feeling that that was that type of situation. At first I had the same thoughts. Is this a mom of some sort for him? And then it kind of just grew into my mind that no, it's probably not his mom, but it does seem like he didn't have a traditional family structure, if you will, growing up. It was somewhat of a rough start for him.
Right. And it's kind of interesting too, is just the idea of Time Lords in general and the fact that they're in a way immortal. And even the aging, we have Smith becoming well, we have, if we even going all the way back to the first Doctor, we have the first Doctor as a very old man, and then it kind of progresses, a couple other older guys, and then there's some younger guys in there, and then you get all the way up to Smith, who is very young. And then he regenerates back into an older man. So it almost seems like every time a Time Lord will regenerate, you don't know how old they're going to be. So the idea of a family structure is kind of odd because your parents, when they die, could regenerate into people that are younger than you, or could regenerate, your dad could regenerate into your new mom, you know? Like, yeah, so,
exactly. That's, I saw a couple comments because later on, again, we're jumping ahead, but when the general becomes, well, the general, just a different gender general, everybody's like, I wonder what his wife thought that day, right, when he left for work and then he comes home a woman.
Right. So just, yeah, the idea of a family structure on Gallifrey, it's almost impossible to define.
Right.
You could say.
Other than maybe you just don't die. You don't anticipate to have all your regenerations used so quickly. But
I guess I never thought about the idea of being married to a Time Lord and then having them regenerate into a different gender.
Yeah.
I never thought about that before. I guess
just
that
wait
would be
for River.
Yeah. So, yeah, so it seemed like the Doctor is a bit of a legend to his people at this point. He's kind of the hero of the Time War that comes up in the episode, but not only just to the military people, but to just these, like, these, I don't know what you would call them, peasants. It's, that seems like a harsh word. But these people that live on the outside of the city. So like kind of the poor group
living in the wastelands.
And it's like the Doctor's sitting there eating soup and he has an audience, you know?
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of interesting to see him come back to Gallifrey in this way, and everyone kind of, you know, is drawn to him.
Yeah, I mean, we have such a different picture of the Time War, of what happened, what the Doctor did after the 50th anniversary. I mean, we know there's the character of the War Doctor, or how they refer to him in this episode, the Doctor of War, which I thought was interesting that they switched it up on us. But, we have the Doctor of War, and we have the picture of Eccleston just being like grieving over what he had done. We have Tennant still torn up over it. And then we have Smith, who seems to have suppressed it for so long. And then the entire story changes for us from the War Doctor being one that destroys everything to being the one that saved everything. And so at that point, the entire legend, or the picture of who the War Doctor was, totally changed. So yeah, here's the Doctor rolling in, and he is a legend. He's a hero. He's one to be honored, and everybody's gathering around him. And it was kind of fun to watch that scene because we get the first military craft rolling in, and like, please step away from the Doctor, and no one moves. Please at least move the kids away, and no one moves. And then I loved this part where they said, any weapon on your person, please lay down. And he drops the spoon.
I know.
I loved that. That was brilliant. But then it kind of progresses because we have different people coming up, and everybody's trying to, or at least the High Council, the ruling Razalon, Lord President, is trying to figure out what does he want, because he draws this line in the sand. I loved that section. It was such a cool part to watch.
Right. I always get confused about the High Council of Gallifrey. I think when we see them at the end of time with Tennant, and you have Rassilon kind of talking to Tennant through this, you know, I don't know, this like wormhole kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And it seems to be like he's with other members of, you know, the Time Lords, and I don't know if they're supposed to be the High Council at that point. But then he sends them back into the Time War, and then we get this new council when we have the War Doctor, and there's like different people. I think the general was there, right?
Yeah, I believe
so. The War Doctor.
Yep.
And then we have kind of a table full of people that are like, oh, the Doctor, you know, it's all 13 of him, you know, that whole scene.
Yeah.
And then now we get another version of the council, but there's really nobody there. It's the president, the general, and the Sisterhood of Karn.
Yeah, I mean, there's one scene where a bunch of people show up wearing funny gowns, funny hats, and like shoulder pads.
In the desert?
Yeah. Like there's a group of 8 or 9 of them. I was thinking that was the High Council, but just the Lord President didn't go. Razalon didn't go with them. He sent them because he's too important.
But in the actual meeting room of the High Council,
there are some sitting at the table.
Okay.
When he says,
at the beginning.
Yeah, at the beginning, and even when he finally shows up, and there's like the general there, and he says, "You lot, you cramp my style with your funny hats."
Okay, yeah, but they were all kind of, I don't know, they just seemed like guards or something to me. They're kind of standing off to the side, that none of them were actually hanging out at the table.
Okay.
But yeah, I've always been a little confused about who is kind of in control when it comes to Gallifrey. And Rassilon, I guess at this point, he's regenerated from the version that we saw with the 10th Doctor.
Right.
And yeah, I don't know, it's just always been confusing to me. And like, if those were the same people that he was dealing with, as the 10th Doctor, as he dealt with as the War Doctor, because Rassilon wasn't there when he was dealing with the High Council with the War Doctor. He was nowhere to be seen.
Right.
But they brought him
Or
back for this, and
was he just a different regeneration and we didn't realize it?
yeah, he just wasn't talking. Yeah, so we get Rassilon in this, and it seems like, we've always kind of been led to believe that Gallifrey doesn't necessarily like the Doctor,
Right.
but it seems like it's more Rassilon doesn't like the Doctor, but everybody else seems to like him just fine.
Which is funny that you should say that because there's the part where Rassilon is talking with Ohilla and he's like he says basically what's the doctor's problem? And Ohilla's like, well, he doesn't blame Gallifrey for the Time War. And Rassilon is like, well, he better not. And she's like, he blames you. So like it's not that Gallifrey hates the doctor, it's that Rassilon hates the doctor. And it's not that the doctor hates Gallifrey. The doctor just hates Rassilon. So it's like that's where all of this is coming from, isn't it? It's just those two fighting it out the entire time.
Right.
It's a battle of egos, right?
Yeah, it's usually what things come down to, right?
Right.
But I mean, he finds kind of an unlikely friend in the general, because it seemed like in the kind of in the 50th anniversary special, where the general was almost the general kind of came across as the leader in that,
Right.
and he definitely was not happy with the doctor. So when you get to this point, I guess the general's had long enough to think about it and is like, oh, maybe I am kind of cool with the doctor now. He saved our
Yeah.
planet.
I was gonna say a lot has changed. Like the war doctor was bent on destruction. He stole the moment, which wasn't a small thing, and everybody is seemed like knew what he was gonna do with that. And then just when he thinks that things couldn't get any worse, the doctor just goes and totally redeems himself.
Totally redeems himself. I mean, you have the soldiers missing on purpose. Nobody's listening to Rassilon at this point, and he's like, "All right, how many regenerations did we give you? I've got all night." I kind of like that line. Probably the best moment for Rassilon, because he didn't
For an
have,
old guy, he's got spunk.
yeah, he didn't have too many good moments. He is definitely not a likable kind of bad guy where you're kind of like, oh, this is kind of a cool guy that I hope comes back. He's just like this really grumpy old man. Maybe this version of him is not as intriguing, maybe, as the one that we got with the 10th Doctor.
Right, this version is totally not Timothy Dalton.
Right. Yeah. And I don't, this actor did seem familiar. Like, I almost feel like I've seen him in Game of Thrones or something, but I don't know. It just.
He probably has been. He's
Yeah.
either in Harry Potter or Game of Thrones, right?
Right.
One of the two.
So the Doctor, is he the Doctor has some great moments. You talk about the spoon, but I also like where he kind of walks right up to the ship and the gun is like pointing him in the face, and he just walks right up to it and draws kind of a line in the sand. I thought that was kind of a cool moment for him as well.
Yeah.
He's not running from booger monsters in this episode. I appreciated that. Yeah, we got, because I kind of said before, I really like it when the Doctor, kind of gets angry, and he's angry this episode. So it was kind of cool to see him. I know he breaks all of his own rules, and that gets called out a couple times, but I kind of like it when the Doctor breaks his rules. In other episodes, we've seen, like, literally, he's afraid to hold a gun. He gets a gun and he kind of throws it away. In this episode, he kills a man with a gun.
Yeah,
So it's definitely an angry doctor. He's kind of at the end of his rope. He's been through, he was in a confession dial for, now we've learned it wasn't just 2 billion years, it was 4 billion years.
roughly 4.5 billion years.
Right. So he's not, he lost his companion. He's been been stuck in this thing for 4 billion years. He's not playing Mr. Nice Guy.
And he even, I mean, as we get in later to the episode when everything starts taking place and Claire is a bigger part of the episode, he even goes as far as to say, like, I'm not the doctor anymore. Like, and Claire starts to ask, like, what happened to the doctor? What'd they do to the doctor? Because he's at that point again where he just doesn't seem like it. But other than being the like forlorn individual that we had when he's talking to with Davros, where he's like, I'm not the doctor because he doesn't save people. This episode, it seems like he's not the doctor because he wants to kill everybody. Like, he doesn't care anymore. It's not that, oh, woe is me, I can't do anything right. It's forget it. I don't care about these rules. Let's just have it out.
All right, so let's talk about this. Clara came back in a big way, and the doctor, because you were just saying he, it kind of seems like he just wants to kill people. It did seem like he had a plan. Before last episode, I was kind of giving it a hard time because I was saying, seems like the doctor stayed there for 4 billion years, or at the time I thought 2 billion years, for no good reason. You know, he was trying to protect a secret that he was willing to give up as soon as he got out of there. I felt like they explained in this episode that he actually wasn't necessarily holding out to protect that secret. He was holding out to have leverage against the Time Lords so he could convince them to bring Clara back. So he was all along trying to get Clara back.
Yeah, and that's I like you said, I'm really glad that they ended up explaining that a little bit more, because you're absolutely right. It's not that he was just like holding on to the secret. He wanted a bargaining chip. He wanted to have something that he could do. And sometime within that 4.5 billion years, he formulated a plan, and he knew exactly what he had to do. Had to do to get Claire back, and he went to Gallifrey with those selfish reasons. Like, he knew what he was going to do. He ended up kicking Razzlon out. He kicks the High Council out, and he makes everybody believe that in order to get the information they need in order to protect Gallifrey from the hybrid, he needed to talk to Clara.
I love the line that the woman from Karn says to him, where he right after he banishes Rassilon, and she's like, "Why did you do it? Were you being cruel? Were you being cowardly?" And I love that line because that's like the doctor's, you know, one of his mantras: never be cruel, never be cowardly. And she's kind of throwing it right in his face, you know, kind of pointing out, "Hey, you're doing both of those things right now." I also kind of liked later on in the episode, you know, when he goes away in the TARDIS and they're like, where is he running to? And she's just like, away. Same place he always goes, away. Like, she at this point has lost all respect for the doctor. And for good reason, I guess you could say. I mean, you know, we can talk about it later on, but he needs a reset. You know, this doctor has gone too far, and he knows he's gone too far.
I totally agree. I
So,
totally agree. And we will definitely talk about that here in a bit.
where were we? Okay, Clara. So we're kind of talking about the doctor had a plan all along. It seemed like he was really just trying to get Clara back, and he knew a way to do it. He can go to this, I don't even remember, what was the chamber called? I forget
The
now.
extraction chamber.
Extraction chamber, and kind of trick them into thinking he needs information from her. They're so afraid of this hybrid. And he's still, you know, he says, it's kind of weird that he did admit, he says at the beginning, like, I know you can still hear me. The hybrid is me. So it's like he kind of admitted to them that, but then later on when they're talking to him about it, it's act like they didn't really know that. So I'm thinking they didn't actually hear it.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, because like if you go back and watch that, he's like, I think you can still hear me, or it I don't know exactly what he says, but there's some uncertainty there. Like,
Right.
I'm
It
sure
wasn't
you can
like a,
still hear me.
right. It was the doctor kind of, if you can still hear me, almost like this, you know, I'm here and the hybrid is me. Now we learn later on that he may not have necessarily met himself, because of the clever naming convention that we got for a different character.
Look at that.
I always thought that was weird that she called herself me, and it actually got kind of annoying to me because I'm like, a shield is such a cool name. Like, just let us call her a shield, or quit saying that her name is me. And then it's like, oh, okay.
Well,
another example of Moffat like planting these seeds
yeah,
and then it
exactly. This
pays
is where
off.
we just full out admit, okay, Moffat, you're smarter than all of us. You know what you're doing. I'm sorry. I'm
Yeah,
the
I mean,
doctor, deal with it.
it's definitely one of the positives when it comes to Moffat. He has a way of seeding things, and they don't always pay off, but when they do, and he does it very well.
I mean, seriously, who would thought, you know what I should name this character? I should just name her me. Because then I can drop all these cool lines over five episodes. Ah, oh, curse you, Moffat.
Yeah, so we get the extraction chamber. The doctor basically tricks the general. At this time now, the Rassilon's gone. So the doctor's calling all the shots. They're even calling him president, but the general seems to be maybe the highest ranking other than the president. So he tricks the Time Lords into, bringing her into this extraction chamber, pulling her out of that moment in time where right before that crow flies into her.
Raven.
Raven. Same thing, right? No.
Face the crow.
Face the crow. It just doesn't sound as cool.
No.
But so they pull her out for the purpose of, the doctor claims that he can get some information from her that he needs about the hybrid. But all along, he was just planning on stealing her and trying to save her life. And he doesn't care at this point if the ramifications of that mean that, like, time is going to rip apart. He just doesn't care.
I mean, I had major flashbacks to Father's Day with Rose, where it's like I was waiting for those time fracture things to start flying around and like snatching people up. That's where my mind always goes to. But
I'm glad they didn't go there.
I know, right? That would have been terrible. I have to ask though, because I know that not all that positive to see Claire showing back up again, to have her playing such a big part in the episode. Even the direction that we ultimately end up going with her, there's a lot of, I don't know, I feel like we might be closer together on how we feel about that. But when it comes to her coming back, how do you feel about how they brought her back here?
I mean, just the fact that they brought her back in this sort of way, the first time I watched the episode, it really bothered me because it was kind of that moment where they killed her. And it wasn't like I necessarily wanted her to die the way that she did. Like that, we had that whole episode where we admitted, that was a really sad ending, but kind of fitting for her. She kind of got in over her head and
Yeah.
got a little too clever for herself, and it was a fitting end for this companion. And it was a unique thing that happened because the doctor typically doesn't lose companions that way. And so I liked that. I liked that they went there. And the fact that they brought her back a little bit in the he Heaven Sent episode where she's just kind of in his mind. And she's, kind of talking to him, and it's like, okay, that's nice. They gave her a little bit more of a goodbye there. And then you get her in the diner. I'm like, okay, that's nice. A little bit more. Like, do we really need three goodbyes to this character? And then the whole extraction chamber starts happening. I'm like, wait, what? Like, they're actually bringing her back from the dead. And it kind of bothered me at first.
Okay, it bothers you, but did you at least like how they did it, or did that even feel cheap to you?
I mean, the Time Lords, I'm learning this about the Time Lords. They can do almost, it seems like, whatever they want. They can take their entire planet and move it to the end of time. They can put the Doctor into a little dial thing for 4 billion years. They can apparently move into somebody's time stream and pull them out at the last moment of their life. There's all this crazy stuff that they can do, Time Lord science. So I guess like that doesn't really bother me that they were able to do that, but I don't know. It just something about it initially just really kind of irked me because it was just kind of like, oh man, you killed her and you took that leap, you did that and it was so cool that you were willing to go there only to just wipe it all away and have her just come back.
If they're gonna bring her back, this is the only way that I can think of that I'm okay with. Like, to me, she was still in the process of dying. Like you said, they're Time Lords. They can do what you want or whatever they want. Just the idea that they can jump into a time stream and pull someone out with full intent of putting them back in, but wanting to like have that last conversation with them to figure out anything that they know that might be helpful. And like as they're doing it, the general's always like, we have to tell them. We always tell everybody. Like we have to explain this to them. Or Clara, like the fact that she's like, oh, something doesn't sound right. And the doctor's explanation of from the moment we're born, we're used to our own heartbeat. And then as soon as that stops, we realize that like we aren't hearing that anymore. I thought it was really cool what they were doing there. And it kind of made me okay with the fact that she popped back up. I wasn't prepared for what they were going to do though. I totally expected them to shove her back into the time stream and we would get to watch her die again.
I kept wanting that. Not
Someone to
that.
run up and push her back into the
No,
picture.
throughout the entire episode, because she even kept telling the doctor, she's like, we can't do this, this is ruining time. And he kept saying, oh, time will fix itself. He's trying to downplay it. But you know that he understands that what he's doing is going to have a big impact, but he's selfishly doing it. And so I kept thinking, okay, she's here. She's almost here as his conscience again. But eventually she's going to kind of be like, hey, doctor, we can't really do this. You got to let me go back. You got to let me die. And I thought we were going to get that moment where he would come to that realization and, put her back. But that never happened. And so I kept hoping that that would happen because I felt like that's what should happen. But I will say that the way that they ended up using her toward the end and what that meant did pay off. For me. So, and I don't know if we want to get into the details of what happens at the end.
Yeah,
I feel
I
like
feel
there's.
like at this point in the story, well, maybe you're getting ready to say something totally different than I was, but I was going to say, I feel like at this point in the story, it's all like it's the story just kind of we can jump to the end and I feel like we don't miss anything.
I
But
mean,
you
we get the
might.
whole thing with the cloister wraiths.
Yeah.
You go get that scene, kind of some interesting backstory there for the doctor and that he had been there
I mean,
before. He's the only one that's ever
yeah,
been there and gotten out.
we get Weeping Angels. We get the bookend of the president's wife in Stealing the Moon. The
Which I still don't get
question
that.
that, no,
No,
it,
I guess they're just saying that the doctor, I don't know, it's like legendary stuff that the doctor's done. I don't know. Are there stories that we're supposed to know? That those things happened.
very, very first episode of this series. Where Missy and Claire are sitting down, and he says, or and Missy says, he's been a girl. He's stolen the president's wife, or he's ran away with the president's wife, and he's stolen the moon. And only two of these things are true. They basically closed that circ or that story, or referenced that again. It's a bookend,
Okay.
because that's why Claire gets that look in her eye because she's like. Someone has already told me this, and that's where she says, I would know you anywhere. I thought that was cool that they referenced that again.
Okay. Yeah, I actually had forgotten. It sounded familiar to me, but I had forgotten those lines, but I thought there maybe was more to it, like, oh, they're like in a classic Doctor Who story or something, he did some of those things, but it sounds like more just Missy kind of telling the legends of the Doctor.
Yeah, no, it's totally. It was just, again, it's one of those things where. Moffat is always going to reference. No story is an individual story. It always comes back up at some point along the line somewhere.
The idea of kind of the Doctor's three biggest foes being there, and when I say three biggest foes, I'm talking Daleks, Time or Daleks, Cybermen, and Weeping Angels. I got it with the Daleks because the Daleks were like part of the Time War, but I didn't get the other two being there because
That's
it's never been a thing like the Time Lords versus the Cybermen or the Time Lords versus the Weeping Angels. I mean, the Doctor versus those things, sure, but the Time Lords.
He made some, like, we've heard time and time again about the Time War. He made some reference as they were just running through there that, oh, that must be a remnant of the Cloister Wars. It's like we were just introduced in passing to this whole new, like, war that took place with the Time Lords that will probably never get fleshed out. Moffat just threw it in there as a way to explain what was happening. But Missy mentioned them in The Magician's Apprentice as well. So she said that showing how deep their friendship was, she said that they survived the Cloister Wars together. Again, Magician's Apprentice, very first episode. Here we are, hellbent. Another statement from Missy being referenced.
And I hope that in knowing Moffat, I will not be surprised at all if that wasn't just, he wasn't just dropping a line there. I think that, that's something that, maybe 3 or 4 seasons from now we get the Doctor involved in the Cloister Wars, and he'll be with Missy, that I could see that happening. I feel like, even with kind of like the Fields of Trenzalore and that kind of thing, and it always does seem to pay off. There's usually more meaning behind some of these things.
Yeah, nothing safe with Moffat. There's no throwaway statements, right?
Right. Throwaway statements are possible stories.
I love Doctor Who.
Apparently, you do a podcast about it. So, let's kind of talk about, I guess we can jump toward the end. There's a couple big things that happen at the end. And one of my favorite things, maybe my favorite part of this episode, is the return of me, or the return of a shoulder.
Yeah. So the doctor, something crazy happens in the Matrix, with the Cloister Wraiths. Claire's like finds out that how long the doctor spent trying to get out of the confession dial. She learns that whole story. She says, "I need to tell you something." And then we pull away. Claire is talking to the doctor somewhere. We're just circling the cloister room, never knowing what Claire actually tells the doctor. And then it comes back. The doctor, Clara stands up, yells at Ohilla and the general, "I hate you. You're terrible people. That's why you're all the way out here. What did you tell the doctor?" "I told him they'd be watching me." And then the doctor comes back in a TARDIS. So the doctor steals the TARDIS. That's where we get the old classic view of the TARDIS. And then Claire and the doctor run away. And that takes us, sorry, to the part that you were just getting ready to talk about, because I love when they get there and there's the four knocks.
That was a great summary, Adam. Yes, always four knocks. I like that. Nice callback. That was such a big part of the end of the four, or the end of the 10th Doctor. So that was a great callback. And also, I like how Claire's like, "Well, who's out there?" And he's like, "Me,"
It confused me at
And
first.
I did think when he said that, when he said me, I was like, "Oh, are we gonna get him like meeting a like another version of
I know,
himself?
right?
Maybe we get like a random, unexpected David Tennant cameo." I'm like thinking, "What's out that door?" And then it's me. It's not me, it's me.
Of course.
So, but I love that too because I really think that the best part of season 9 was the introduction of a shoulder. I thought that was kind of, I don't know. For me personally, I just really enjoyed the progression of that story and how the Doctor has created this other immortal that, he does kind of find at the end of time. I love the quote too. I forget. I'm trying to remember it now. Like, something about when you reach the end.
At the end of everything, expect the company of immortals.
And that quote was actually earlier in the episode. The Sisterhood of Karn, that woman said it to him, and so he's kind of just repeating that back to me. But I like that. I thought that was a cool quote.
Yeah, definitely is. The whole concept of the immortals, and by this point in time, Me has said that she's the last of the immortals, and she's sitting there and she's watching everything else burn away. She's watching everything else collapse. And she's, I don't know, maybe it's just me. She seems like a totally different character at this point. Like, maybe after, I mean, she's lived far longer than the doctor, right? She's past 4.5 billion years old, probably.
Maybe. I don't
And
know.
she's lived a very, very long life, and she's watched everything come and change. She just seems totally different. Like the first couple episodes we see here, well, as a shielder, young girl, not really sure of herself, has no idea what's going on. Second episode, we get me, who's angry and vengeful. Third episode, we get me, who's in charge of the street, but yet she's still, I know, she doesn't seem like she's owning her own destiny. And then here we get her, and she's has a chessboard in front of her, serenely watching the universe burn and collapse. It's such a, I don't know, an interesting progression for her, especially as an immortal character. Yeah. And she's the last of them.
I love the progression of this character. I love the fact that the doctor, you know, our first introduction to her is this innocent girl that the doctor decides to save, you know, and he's talking about tidal waves and, you know, come to find out that really he caused his own, not necessarily his own demise, but she was definitely involved in why he was trapped there for 4 billion years. She was involved in why Clara died. Yep. You know, all of this stuff happened because the doctor decided to save an innocent girl. So even in the best intentions, you know, he kind of screwed himself. And, you know, I kind of like that progression that we get with this character. And then in the end, who's there to greet him at the end of time but the girl that he saved from dying?
Yeah, she's a fun character. And she, in the Doctor Who extra, Peter Capaldi kind of sums her up as she's turned into, in a way, his Jiminy Cricket. Because here he is at the end of time. He's getting ready to do something, really getting ready to do something to Clara, without asking her permission, without making sure it's okay. And a shielder, me, is the one that's double checking with him. Are you sure this is really what you should be doing? That's not right. You shouldn't be doing that. She is acting as his conscience at this point in time. The guy who's willing to, or the doctor who's willing to let a billion hearts burn, to watch a billion hearts destroyed, to mend his own. She's calling him on the carpet with it.
Right. And we get the discussion about the hybrid. The doctor is convinced that me is the hybrid.
Which makes total sense based on the ending of Heaven Sent.
Right. But then she's kind of like, I like how she responds to it, because he's the doctor. So when he says something like that, it's supposed to be correct, right?
Right, right. He's always right. Just he's like, the most clever person in the room.
Right. But in this case, maybe he's not, you know, because she's like, oh, that's a nice theory, but what about this? And then so she kind of goes back at him and says, well, maybe you're the hybrid. And she kind of talks about him being half Time Lord, half human, which I jokingly last episode said, oh, they wouldn't go there because that was something that happened in the, you know, Eighth Doctor one-off movie. It's been retconned since. But no, they bring that back, you know. So maybe the Doctor is half human. But they were vague about it. It wasn't like a statement of fact. It was more kind of like, well, I forget how she worded it, but it was kind of like, you know, who are your parents or who is your mother? I forget. But
why have you always spent so much time on Earth?
Yes, right. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so I thought that was kind of cool. But then, you know, she also has a theory that maybe it's the time, or maybe the hybrid is the combination of him and Clara. You know, it's two people, and Missy purposely brought them together because she's the bringer of chaos. And so I just liked all of that. But I like that it was all theory and none of it was like definitive. Like they didn't say, no, this is who the hybrid is. I think we still don't know.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because the entire time, not the entire time, but we're at the end, we're finding out that the doctor has been worried or scared of the hybrid this entire time. And if it is true that him and Clara, if their combination is the hybrid, it's kind of one of those like self-fulfilling prophecies, right? That's they're spending so much time. He spent so much time running away from the fact of the hybrid that he ultimately ends up creating it. It's just really cool that if that is the direction, but like you said, it's totally open. We have no idea.
Right. And once again, kind of like Bad Wolf, where we had a couple of different times we thought we got the resolution of that. And then all the way up to the 50th anniversary, there's still Bad Wolf going on. I feel like the hybrid is something that's going to pop up again.
Yep.
Yeah, so we get kind of the scene, the more pivotal scene where he is trying, you know, his whole plan is he's going to erase Clara's memory. He thinks that's going to solve the problem. He's like, I've gone too far. I know I've gone too far. My solution is I'm going to erase her memory. She's going to forget all about me, and it's going to fix everything. But he's still determined to save her life. But she has different ideas. She's not ready to, you know, give up her memories. I like that this isn't the first time this has kind of happened with companions. You know, like with Donna, he erased Donna's memory to save her life. Oh, there was something else I was going to reference, and I'm blanking on it now. But yeah, so specifically Donna. Oh yeah, the other thing I was going to talk about is River Song, where it gets to the point where he's like, she's going to die, and he's like, no, I can change time. You know, things can be changed, and she's like, don't you dare. You know, like my history is mine, and we get like such a similar line from Clara. So I kind of like the idea that this isn't kind of the first time the doctor's been faced with this, but he keeps kind of making the same mistakes.
I love that line from Clara, the we're not promised tomorrow, but I at least deserve my history, my past. Like that concept of it's so true. Like, how could you rip that away from someone? How could you just wipe all of that out, all of those memories, all those adventures, all that time? I know that he has what he believes her best interest in mind, but that whole idea of no, I want to keep my past no matter what happens. I at least want to have that. Someone drew an interesting comparison between Donna Noble, the idea of her being the Dr. Donna. And that is the reason why she had to forget about the doctor, because she was too dangerous to herself. And kind of here we have Clara becoming a companion, becoming the most like the doctor that we've ever seen. And the doctor's like, okay, it's time to wipe your memory as well. It's like anytime you become too much like the doctor, it's time to have your memory wiped.
Yeah, and this time it literally backfired on him.
Yeah, literally. I mean, Clara, she used the sonic sunglasses. Reroutes the thing.
And this is another part where on first viewing it kind of annoyed me, because I'm thinking, oh, here we go again. They're really trying to make Claire into this character that we're supposed to think is just so impressive, that she actually outsmarts the doctor. Like, nobody's supposed to outsmart the doctor. You know, so my first viewing of this, it kind of annoyed me. By the third viewing, you know, I was, you know, kind of on board with this idea and thinking, you know, what happened kind of is what had to happen, I think, with the doctor and where he was. His whole solution was he was gonna erase her memory, but what does that solve for him? You know, he's the one, I think, that is the danger. He, when you have a Time Lord that literally is killing people because he wants to save his companion, that Time Lord needs something fixed. And so if he had erased her memory, that doesn't really do anything for him. So I kind of liked where they went with this, where, you know, he needed a reset, and this was the way to do it.
I totally agree. That's the first time I watched it. It was like, I can't believe they did that. Like, they did that to the doctor. But like you said, she in Face the Raven, she willingly said, "Doctor, stop. Like, this is what has to happen. It's my own fault. Let me go through with it." And she walked out on the street and she faced it and she was gone. The doctor then spent 4.5 billion years not forgetting about Clara, doing everything and everything possible that he could have to get her back. Even if her memory was wiped, like you said, it wouldn't have done anything for the doctor. She was willing to just move on. Even after what happens to the doctor, she's willing to just move on. It's the doctor that was not willing to let go of it. And that idea of a reboot, I feel like this changes a ton of things. I feel like this reboot of the doctor, yeah, he still has the memory of things that took place, but he has no memory of Clara. Last episode, I said that I felt like for coming companions, everything would be compared to Clara.
I
That's
know.
completely out the door. Like
Yeah.
you can't compare anything to someone that you can't even remember. It's kind of a blank slate, and I feel like next season we're gonna I'm I'm going to have a completely different doctor than what I even expected. And I'm excited about that. I feel like moving into series 10, it's a doctor that I'm super stoked to see what happens.
Yeah, I think this was needed. And a lot of the gripes that we were having, or me specifically, I was having about kind of the way this doctor was going. And it was thinking, oh, the sonic sunglasses and, you know, all of that stuff. It's just like, this isn't the doctor to me anymore. It's too far from what I know. And I think that was maybe the whole point.
Yeah. No, and totally.
The whole time I'm sitting there like getting angry at the show because of this and not realizing I'm being set up, you know,
yeah.
for this ending. And, you know, where we do have that moment where he realizes, she's like, where's your, you know, where's that red coat that you wore? I really like that. You know, that was very doctor-y. You know, he's become this new character. And I think it's all kind of summed up in, you know, his appearance when he walks into that diner. You know, he's not that same doctor that we saw when he first showed up on the scene. You know, kind of we were comparing to looking like a magician, you know, prim and proper. You know, he's still got his sonic, you know, he's got this kind of cool look to him, this real sleek look. And then in this season, he's all disheveled all the time. You know, his hair's kind of messed up and, you know, he gets rid of his sonic and he's wearing sunglasses instead. And it's like he's become this whole different character that was no longer the doctor.
Yeah.
And this was the way that they reset it. You know, it's kind of like, nope, you know, you've gone too far. You've gone too far astray. And by losing your memories, you are now going to kind of be reset. And I love that scene where he sees the TARDIS, he walks into it, and, you know, lo and behold, he gets a new sonic. You know, the TARDIS creates a new sonic for him. We have this kind of almost cheesy, but still almost really cool moment where it shoots out and he catches it. And it's like this, you know, momentous scene. And yeah, by that point, I was like, goosebumps. I'm into this. This is cool.
Yeah, if Moffat can do anything, he can write a finale. Like he knows how to draw everything together. He knows how to give you that one moment at the end. And like you said, when he pushes the door open to the TARDIS, all the lights start coming on. You see him putting back on his jacket. he putting on his jacket again. The sonic shoots out. He catches it. He looks at it. And then he snaps the door and the doors close. That was like, okay, like you said, it's just a solid way to get us excited for what the doctor's story is going to be. And I can't help but feeling it's going to be different. Now, we've already seen bits and pieces of what it's like with the Christmas episode. But I don't know if that's going to really give us a full picture of who the doctor is come series 10 when it comes around.
And it's not even that I think it's not like, oh, this is like almost like a regeneration in a way that we're going to get a doctor with a whole different.
They approached it though very much like a regeneration. All his goodbyes, like where he's slowly fading out and he does the, don't be cruel, don't be cowardly.
Mm-hmm.
As he runs a laugh, always laugh, always run, all those lines, don't eat pears. They get on your chin. Like that was very much like a regeneration right there. The way that they approached it, I can just envision like him waking up and being, my kidneys are blue, or whatever that line was that he said, like that same, I don't know. It had that same format, but instead of, yeah, I don't know. It just felt, that scene felt very much like a regeneration to me. Like this is a soft regeneration.
Yeah, Capaldi has already gotten a better regeneration than Matt Smith got, and his real regeneration hasn't even happened yet. but yeah, I guess I never really thought about it like that. But yeah, you're right. It did seem like this totally could have been in a final episode for Capaldi. You know, he could have realized he's gone too far, and then have a scene where instead of it being something that was going to erase, you know, his memory, something that was going to kill him, you know, and he ends up, you know, regenerating, and then we get a new doctor. Like, you know, maybe they wrote it that way to have that option. You know, maybe they, you know, didn't know if Capaldi was going to come back for another season. So maybe they did purposely write it in a way that they could have, you know, easily changed it to be a regeneration. But yeah, I loved all that stuff. The dialogue as he was kind of saying goodbye to her, You know, like you said, with the jacket and the Sonic, all of that. I was really on at that point. Even with the first viewing, as much as I had issues with other things that happened in the episode, that this part I really, really enjoyed. Not so much what was going on with Clara and Ashildur in the diner TARDIS.
Yeah, we totally jumped over that, probably for good reasons. But yeah, that's interesting.
That happened.
I totally see what they're wanting to do. They want to give Clara that happy send off. They want to, in a way, complete that transformation of her character into being the companion that is most like the doctor that we've ever had. I mean, she flies off with her own companion and her own TARDIS with a chameleon circuit that's stuck, going the long way round to get back to Gallifrey. Like, she is at that point the doctor.
Which I didn't, I have to say though, I didn't like that. Like I liked what happened with Capaldi, and I felt like that was fitting for him, but I felt like we got the fitting end for Clara already with the Face of the Raven episode. Like where this companion had kind of got, like we said before, had gotten in over her head and paid the price for it. But now it's kind of like, oh no, she didn't really pay the price for it. Instead, we gifted her own TARDIS and now
I
she's
know.
facing the
Instead,
doctor. You
yep,
know, so she didn't
exactly.
learn her lesson. She's like, oh, everything worked out for me, you know, like, and now I'm literally immortal and I can kind of just travel around time with this other immortal person and, you know, and kind of go the long way around. Eventually I'll come back and make things right and actually die, but I'll do it on my own terms. So for that part of it, I was kind of just like, eh, I don't know if I really wanted that for Clara. I feel like she didn't really earn that.
Yeah, I the only thing that gives me a slight glimmer of satisfaction in that, you probably have thought of this already. She can go save Danny Pink.
In what way?
She will find a way to save Danny Pink. She has her own TARDIS now. It will happen.
I mean, she's still got to live by the rules of, you know, not going back and, you know, fixed points in time. I mean,
What rules?
I think
She's not
it's,
a Time Lord.
yeah. Oh man, see, that's the thing. Like the whole idea of her having her own TARDIS to me is so dangerous.
I
You
know,
know,
right? She can't die.
her
Well,
ability, her
she's
immortal,
dead.
she's basically immortal now until she wants to die. And she has a TARDIS, so she's basically a time traveler who doesn't die. What do I mean, that's a she's basically a time lord. And but without, I don't know, without the experience of the time lord or of the doctor, you know. I feel like she's the type of person that will abuse this power. And
I have a feeling that she needs Danny Pink.
I there's
Danny
no
Pink would keep her in line and frown at, on her. He would say, "You have to go die.
I
I
mean
died, you go die."
I mean, one of the things I saw, like, kind of social media wise, right after this, was like, please, oh, give us a spin-off series about Clara and Ashildur. I'm like, no, please don't. Like, that's not the Doctor Who I want to watch. You know, Clara is not the Doctor. I thought that was the whole point. The whole point is they were trying to show us that she wasn't the Doctor and that she had gone too far. And then in the end, they make her the Doctor.
Right.
That part of it, I just didn't like.
No, I totally agree. It's not my favorite part of the episode. That is probably one of the episode parts of the episode that I would cut out entirely. Other than the fact that, like, I liked how she left the doctor. That was a highlight. And I don't know how you could take her character and just be like, okay, I'm going back to Gallifrey, and then she dies again. Of course she's gonna do that. That's just who she is.
I
But I
feel like
really
that could have
wish
been her
that they.
redeeming moment. That's the thing. Like, I think literally the episode could have gone exactly how it did, but then in the end, instead of having her fly off with a shoulder, have her go back to Gallifrey and then have, you know, don't necessarily, we don't need to see her die again, but just have her kind of walking toward the city, you know, and, you know, owning up to what she needs to do to save the galaxy. I mean, as long as she doesn't go back and fix that moment, there is damage being done to the universe. So
But that's
she's,
not who Claire is.
but
She never
that's
has
not,
been that.
that's true. But this was a chance, I think, to show the growth in the character and learning her mistakes. But that's what it's missing.
The doctor stole that one moment from her. That was the one moment that she had was when she faced the Raven, and the doctor stole that moment from her. After that, nope, all bets are off.
She said, "Let me be brave," and she went and faced the raven, only to not be brave and run away. So,
yep. It's ruined.
Oh, Clara. Just when I was starting to like you.
it's done. It's over. It is open that she could show back up again, but I am probably saying it's only open so that come the 75th anniversary of Doctor Who, that's when we'll see her.
Yeah, what she's actually going to do is go all around time and pick up all of her splinter versions. So then we just have a lot of Claras all hanging out on the TARDIS together.
Nice. That's either that she's going to go collect companions.
Right.
Like all the Doctor's previous companions with a shielder.
So you're right. This does leave the door open that the character can return. So that probably will happen at some point. Once she's done kind of doing a couple of these other shows that she's going to do. But, yeah, I don't know. I think we've talked about most of everything that went on. Is there anything that we missed that you wanted to talk about?
I would say that we pretty much covered everything. Yeah. Overall feelings for this being the final episode of the season.
I thought it was good. I thought it went out on, a high note. You know, there were a couple things that were not my favorite that happened in this episode, but overall, I really thought the ending was great, perfect for what we needed for Capaldi. So yeah, I thought it was a really good finale. I was very pleased with it.
I'm right there with you. I think it was a great final episode, great two story arc to finish it off. The more that I think about this episode, the more that it's to me seems like a reflection of the series as a whole, where you just have like these really great high moments, and then you have these low moments where it's like, why'd you go there? And then it brings you right back up to the high moments. It seems like there's ebbs and flows, but as I look at this episode, as I look back on the series, all that sticks out are the high moments. Like there were some really solid aspects of this series, and it seems like they're all reflected in the finale. And Moffat, I don't like saying it because I know that's what he wants us all to say at the end, but he really is smarter than me. Like he knows what he's doing, and I know that's what he wants us to say, and it kills me to say it, but he does an incredible job of just weaving different elements back into the story. He does a great job of bringing up our favorite moments from previous episodes and resurfacing them in this episode. He does a really good job. So, yeah, caps off for Moffat for bringing us to a fitting end to Series 9.
True, true. I don't know if I would have as high praise for Moffat. I think that with the good comes the bad with Moffat. But in this specific instance, I was very pleased with the way he tied things together and how it all ended, for sure. So, but yeah, we have the Christmas special coming up in a couple weeks, so we won't be gone for too long until we can come back and talk about that one. I'm excited about the return of River Song and kind of seeing where the Doctor is going to go from here. And that Sonic was really cool. I'm wondering how they're gonna, you know, the Sonics that we've had in the past have been a lot more simple. And so when they do the replicas that you can buy online and they only cost like $20, I feel like if I try to buy the replica for this one, it's going to be like $100. Like there's a lot more going on with this one.
I don't know. Like this one doesn't extend. The other one's like extended. This one just has the circling lights.
Yeah, it has, but the lights are so much, there's so much more light to it. Like the other ones just had the light at the very end.
Yeah,
but this is like the whole half of the thing is like the blue lights, and it kind of like rotates, and I don't know. I just feel like it's a little bit more complex of a prop. So might be something that would be a premiere. You know, if you're trying to buy that replica, you might be forking out a little bit more money for this one.
We shall see. It won't be long until we can start spotting them everywhere.
Yep. So well, as usual, if you like our show and you would like to leave us a review, we'd really appreciate that. You can head on over to iTunes, leave us a nice 5-star review. You can follow us on Twitter @Bad Wolf Podcast. Facebook, we are Bad Wolf Radio. We were kind of talking before about the different conversations going on Facebook. It seems to be kind of where most of our interaction comes from. So those of you that are doing that, please continue to do it. We really enjoy interacting with you guys over there. And you can send us an email, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. And until next time,
Major Davis.